So this interview is a sleeper interview. I am super excited to have this person be able to talk with us. She is a nurse practitioner specializing in palliative care. Now, what does palliative care have to do with the risks of pain medication? I mean, the perception many times is we want the risks at this point. I mean, isn't palliative care all about helping people die quicker? No, far from it. So I'm really happy that she can not only educate me on the difference between palliative care and hospice, hopefully you may learn a few tips or tricks as well, but we end up exploring how those side effects and risks that we see in the normal patient population and the acute care population, how that actually makes sense in a therapeutic way in a palliative care population, and how it may explain some of the things that we see in that population. So really, I'm hoping this will give you some good educational nuggets that you'll be able to share with patients, some insights that help put a good context on this rather specialized area of care. So without further ado, here's our talk. Welcome to the Medication Safety Podcast, the Applied Medication Safety.
Thank you.
We do keep this anonymous, so we want to respect your privacy with respect to who you are, who you work for, especially if there are situations that we bring up or discuss that might be sensitive in nature. So with that understood, how about if you just do a brief introduction of what you do and what you are focused on?
Sure. So I am a nurse practitioner who has a long history in oncology, cancer care, but most recently, the last 20 years, I've spent in palliative care. And I have been intimately involved in that service since.
Excellent. For myself, I've been in medicine for over 30 years as both a nurse and a pharmacist, and have certainly come to appreciate the value of palliative care. I think as a Western society, we do a fantastic job at living, prolonging life, but very little focus on how to die with dignity, even though it is an inescapable conclusion for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, and just to make the distinction too between, because a lot of people, when they hear palliative care, don't know what it is. So, and a lot of people do associate palliative care with hospice care, and we are a little bit different. Mm-hmm. So we, in palliative care, we see people at any point in their illness trajectory, and our focus really is on quality of life and managing symptoms for anybody who has a serious, usually life-limiting illness. Mm-hmm. And I agree 100% with you. I think, you know, we've done really good in Western medicine at creating, identifying, exploring, discovering interventions that improve life extension, and sometimes just don't know when they make sense and when they don't. And so in palliative care, we really focus a lot on quality of life and what's really important to that individual when we're offering these interventions. And that's the quality of life piece, I think, sometimes what gets missed in traditional Western medicine.
So the focus that we have is on opiates. And when you talk about what is important to those individuals to focus on, I can see that as both a positive and a negative value. For example, I want to spend more time with my family, or I want a higher quality of life, being positive attributes, but also negative attributes, such as I don't want to spend a lot of time in the hospital, or I don't want to be addicted to medications. So as it comes to at least medication management and pain medications specifically, what do you kind of see when you're talking to people about palliative care? Where's the breakdown with respect to those positive values and those negative values?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So I think if we're kind of, there's a whole, I would say, arsenal of medications that can be used to help with a variety of symptoms, whatever they might be. If we want to focus, I know you can't really live in America and not have heard about the opioid crisis in our country. And that does put a lot of fear in people about any even appropriate use of opioids. So to focus on like that aspect of it for a minute or the whole time or whatever, however we want to do that. I do think that, there's several things to identify. First of all, it's right for us to be very cautious about the use of opioids. There certainly are people who are unintentionally dying of opioids every day in our country. That is, it is a crisis. That said, I think there are places where the use of opioids is appropriate and helpful to try to improve quality of life for people who are suffering symptomatically. And again, in the population of patients I see or people that I see, they are usually looking at a shorter life trajectory. So it might be weeks, months, a year or two. You know, it's usually not many, many years down the road. So if your time is short, then it's less likely this problem of addiction is going to happen or impact your life. If you have a history of addiction, then we should be particularly cautious about how we're using opioids no matter what your quality of life is, trajectory is. But for most patients who don't have a history of addiction with opioids, using opioids for things like pain management, and the lowest dose possible, obviously, that works. Using opioids for pain management or breathlessness, we often use it when people feel really short of breath, can be a way to control that symptom without hastening death, I'd say the two things people worry about with opioids are, I'm going to get addicted, it's going to hasten my death. And both of those things could be possible, but used judiciously and correctly and under the appropriate supervision, neither of those things need to happen.
Absolutely. In terms of hastening death, it's an unmasking, because opiates will often create a sense of relaxation, a removal of the pain stimulus. And in toxicity will certainly be a precipitating cause. If you have a opiate toxicity, then yes, you're going to have your respirations affected and certainly have that as a primary cause. But in terms of the other effects where it causes a release of comfort, sometimes it's an unmasking of underlying physiology that will then take over. So for example, a person who is relying on that pain stimulus for alertness and for activation, that pain becomes relieved and now they have no further physiologic resistance to the processes that are going on. So in a secondary way, those opiates unmask an already natural process going on. Does that sound like it's reasonable?
Yeah, no, that's really, I don't know that I've heard it put quite that way, but yeah, that totally seems reasonable and makes sense. So that, if I can restate it a little bit or say it how I heard what I heard you just say, a patient who is particularly, I think we're talking about close to death, mm-hmm. who is suffering, I would say, with pain or some kind of physiological distress, that suffering is sort of pushing them or pressing them to maybe live a little bit longer in a very uncomfortable state because their body's working so hard to try to stay alive. And when we can relax that pain or discomfort or distress, the body can then naturally sort of relax into the natural dying process.
Yeah.
Is that?
Well, it's the inverse of hastening a death, which is not allowing the suffering and the pain to artificially extend life. So rather than having a longer, more painful life full of suffering, we relieve that suffering and the body feels free to let go mm-hmm. and let that natural course take effect.
Yep, I think that does make sense. I think in general, I would say when patients do or people do worry about that, often family members worry about that. I do say that, of course, hastening death is not legal in this country, or certainly not in the state of Virginia. And we never would we would never prescribe an opioid for that intention. So we would never prescribe an opioid to hasten death or bring death, you know, to have that occur sooner. And our intention really around the opioid is to relieve symptoms. So if I was symptom free and actively dying, there would be no need for opioids.
Right.
You know, if I was symptom free and had nausea, there would be no need for opioids. So it's really symptom specific. And if for me, I'm not on opioids now, and so I'm no opioid naive, then it would start with a very low dose. That in fact probably wouldn't even be a big enough dose to cause a toxicity that would hasten death. So it's a little bit of a misnomer. I know I have had family members tell me that when patients get in hospice, that happens. You know, they just give you morphine until you die. And I just want to say in that regard, even though I'm not a hospice nurse practitioner, anybody who's on hospice has control over whether they're taking that opioid or not. So it's nobody's going to force that on them. It would always be, and in palliative care too, nobody's going to force an opioid on somebody who doesn't want it or need it.
I'm thinking too about folks that are listening, because there is a huge psychosocial complexity that surrounds palliative care, that surrounds hospice care when family's involved with significant others, and somebody's making the decision to say, yes, let's use some opiates to relieve their suffering, and then they die. Mm-hmm. And then there's this incredible guilt that comes over them. And I guess I just wanted to say, kind of for the record, that it's not so much a hastening of death as it may be letting that person experience some comfort in that natural process takes over.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true too. And that, you know, that happens in the hospital, like especially with younger nurses, that you're the one who goes in and gives somebody's in distress, they're having pain or they're very short of breath. You give that dose of opioid and they die, and nurses often feel like, oh my gosh, I did that. But we have to remember that this person's biology is dying. I mean, their body is dying. They're not dying by that comfort that we're providing them. They're dying from the underlying issue, whatever that might be.
And we see this anecdotally with healthy patients where there is an unmasking effect. When you have a person who is in great pain, say from a broken femur, which is horrifically painful, and they get loaded up with narcotics. And then when the bone is set and they're surrounded by family and they're in a warm, comfortable environment, they lose all of those activating signals that kept them awake and alert. And suddenly there's nothing to oppose the medication that has been loaded on board. And then they suffer an over-sedation event. Mm-hmm. So we see that in our healthy population, which is something we want to avoid. Mm-hmm. And the same principle applies, I think, in the palliative and the hospice care population as well.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Yes. I was going to say the difference is that often in the palliative care patients, you have a symptom that probably it's not going to be a femur that gets better again. You know, you have kind of a chronic issue, although sometimes we do things that do make them better, like radiation therapy to help with pain or what have you. But yes. Yeah. And you always, always, always start very low. Doses very low. And this is another thing with patients who come in and who are in distress. I have to say, okay, we have to have an agreement here. I'm not going to get this right off the bat. We're going to start low. We're going to see how you do. We're going to evaluate. We can get you better, but it's not going to be probably instantaneous.
Yes, absolutely. So shifting the gears just a tad here, when we're looking at these patients and they're afraid of addiction, and again, for clarification, the new terminology is substance use disorder with that. And it is used in a way that is hopefully it carries less baggage, let's say, for an individual to say there's a substance use disorder as opposed to they're addicted. We'll use the term addiction, I think, because it's more commonly understood by most folks, but just realize what we mean is the substance use disorder. There's a difference between dependence and the addiction. And I'm wondering if you are in some discussions with folks and are able to draw that line between how do you tell the difference and how do you explain to somebody that it's okay if you're dependent on a drug because we're not going to let you get addicted to this drug?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great distinction. Typically, again, I just want to say that most people who are worried about addiction most of the people who bring that up to me have not had a history of addiction in the past or a substance use disorder in the past. And then in terms of the distinction between addiction and dependence, I mean, addiction or substance use disorder is a whole psychosocial, biological issue. Dependence is really just a biological thing. So if one was to require an opioid for an extended period of time regularly, then your body does get used to having that medication on board. And that would mean that we would need to, when we stop that medication, if we wanted to stop the opioid, then we would step down off it and not stop it abruptly because your body's used to having that in its system. So dependence is, from my perspective or how I describe it, is when your body becomes used to this substance and you cannot stop it abruptly, and we would just taper it down as one might do with many medications that are not opioids. There's antidepressants that you cannot stop abruptly. There's neurological agents like gabapentin that you can't stop abruptly. There's hypertensive medications. It's not good. So there's many medications that you can, a body that we can get dependent on, but that is very different from addiction. And really it just speaks to the inability to stop it abruptly. Addiction is a craving for that medication, a need for that medication, even when there's no pain need or dyspnea need. It's very, very different than dependence.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the other medications as well, because we tend to associate the term withdrawal associated with narcotics and opiates, when in fact we see discontinuation symptoms associated with other medications. And why we use the two terminologies is beyond me. But we do absolutely see discontinuation symptoms with those antidepressants, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. We see that with the gabapentin. We can see it with Tylenol. There's actually an overuse phenomenon with Tylenol where one of the discontinuation symptoms of chronic Tylenol use is a headache, which is what prompts the Tylenol. And there is no good treatment for that other than to stop using Tylenol. And after about 3 or 4 days, the body re-equilibrates and you're able to reduce the frequency of headaches, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think just dependency is very, very different than addiction, and dependency is not at all equivalent to addiction.
So for those patients that are coming into palliative care and they are being confronted with this, of course, often tragic, life-changing event that they have to deal with, and then they're being hit with a lot of these different regimens that have a different goal of care, let's say, because prior to the initiation of palliative care, the goal is usually a restoration of function, but palliative care's goals are quite different. So you want to speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, they can be, part of quality of life can be restoration of function to the degree we can get to it. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has such debilitating pain from their metastatic cancer in their leg, then we might use opioids or radiation, some kind of intervention to try to restore better function to that. I think there are some overlapping goals between pre-palliative care and palliative care. I mean, we even can see people in palliative care who are going for curative, intention in terms of whatever their, usually that would be a cancer patient, in terms of their treatment regimen.
And that was a fascinating discussion. Unfortunately, we had to cut it short due to a patient emergency, but no fear. I will certainly ask to have her back on, and we can go through some of the questions that we were only beginning to hint at in this conversation. It was really fascinating. Greatly appreciate the work that she does. And for all of you who are involved in palliative care, end of life and hospice care, thank you for your caring. It is not just the things that we do, but it's how we do it that matters so much. And the loving touch that you provide, that look, just the hand on the arm, those are the things that mean so much more than a medication or a treatment. So thank you for the love and the care that you provide to patients. As always, if you found something helpful or useful, please share this with a friend. That's really helpful. That helps get the word out. Give us a 5-star review if you think we've earned it. And I guess at the end of the day, care safely.